picture Bobby Knight's chair skidding across the basketball court in 1985, commentators praising his fire and intensity. For decades, we mistook this rage for strength. We celebrated coaches who screamed until veins bulged, CEOs who terrorized boardrooms, and drill sergeants who broke recruits down to build them back up. This theatrical toughness, all snarl and swagger, became our cultural blueprint. But what if everything we believed about resilience was backward? What if real toughness looked nothing like the chest-thumping bravado we've been sold? Steve Magness spent years as both elite athlete and performance coach discovering an uncomfortable truth. The toughness we worship is often a mask for deep insecurity, and the strength we dismiss as weakness might be our greatest asset. The most resilient people aren't those who bulldoze through pain. They're the ones who've learned to dance with discomfort, to listen rather than dominate, to bend without breaking. The Junction, Texas training camp of 1954 became legendary in football lore. Coach Bear Bryant deliberately created hellish conditions, scorching heat, brutal drills, terrible facilities, to separate quitters from keepers. Nearly 100 players started, only 30 survived 10 days. We mythologized this brutality as the foundation of championship toughness. The team went 1-9 that season. 2 years later, when A&M finally went undefeated, only 8 Junction survivors played on the roster. The stars, including Heisman winner John David Crow, never attended that camp. Bryant himself later apologized, admitting he'd mistreated those young men. Yet we still worship this model. We've confused sorting for development, mistaking who can endure abuse for who can actually grow stronger. Even Navy SEAL Hell Week doesn't create toughness. It identifies candidates who already possess certain traits. Modern military training evolved beyond simple survival tests to include comprehensive psychological preparation before exposure to extreme conditions. Real toughness isn't about surviving cruelty. It's about experiencing discomfort, leaning in, paying attention, and creating space for thoughtful action. Sometimes that means pushing through. Sometimes it means going around, under, or waiting for the storm to pass. True resilience requires a full toolkit, not just a hammer.
Watch elementary students attempt their first mile run. They explode from the starting line, drain their tanks within minutes, then alternate between gasping walks and desperate sprints. Experienced runners maintain steady rhythm throughout. Our minds create internal maps of how challenges should feel at different stages, like a fuel gauge comparing consumption against distance remaining. Performance boils down to a simple formula: what we can actually handle divided by what we expect to handle. Alex Honnold free-soloed El Capitan's 3,000-foot face without ropes, yet he's not fearless. During his first attempt, he abandoned the climb, admitting, "It's too scary." His advantage isn't absent fear, but accurate threat assessment. Before stressful events, our bodies prepare based on expectations, not reality. Novice skydivers flood with cortisol, a threat hormone, while veterans produce adrenaline, a challenge hormone. Same jump, radically different internal experience. The 1990s self-esteem movement tried fixing confidence with external validation, participation trophies, forced compliments, believe-in-yourself mantras. This backfired, making self-worth the goal rather than a byproduct of achievement. Real confidence emerges from 4 practices. Raise your floor rather than chasing ceiling performances. Shed perfection and embrace who you actually are. Trust your training and yourself. Develop what researcher Heidi Weymouth calls a quiet ego. Turn down your psychological immune system enough to actually hear feedback rather than reflexively defending against it.
The 1607 Jamestown colony collapsed not from violence, but from hopelessness. Starving settlers refused to plant food. Psychologist John Leach calls this give-up-itis, a progression from withdrawal to apathy to literal death. Vietnam researcher Peter Born discovered something remarkable. Soldiers' stress hormones dropped during expected attacks, while officers spiked. Same danger, opposite responses. The difference? Perceived control.
Soldiers had specific tasks, officers had information, but less direct influence. When we have control, our prefrontal cortex regulates emotions. Without it, our brain's alarm system runs wild. Stephen Meyer's research revealed we don't learn helplessness. We must learn hopefulness. Our brains need to discover control before they can quiet threat responses. Build genuine resilience by starting small. Can't control overwhelming anxiety? Control your breathing. When runner Meredith vomited before every race, her coach asked, "What time would you like to throw up?" This reframe, from victim to decision maker, allowed her best race ever without getting sick. Even small rituals like Rafael Nadal's pre-serve routine establish order when outcomes feel uncertain. Stephen has alexithymia. He can't identify emotions. He married while emotionally numb, experiencing anything requiring an emotional response feels fake. While extreme, we all vary in emotional literacy. The key distinction? Feelings are subtle internal messengers. Emotions are complex alarm bells incorporating context and meaning. Your feelings aren't just reactive, they're predictive, forecasting how taxing challenges might be. Neuroscientist Antonio Damasio studied patients with damaged emotion centers who made terrible life decisions without normal feelings. Nearly 17% of teenagers self-harm to trade overwhelming emotional confusion for comprehensible physical sensation. Meanwhile, resilient individuals and profitable stock traders possess superior interoceptive abilities, accurately reading bodily signals for better decisions under pressure. Developing this skill requires two practices. Expose yourself to various sensations, then direct attention toward them without judgment. Second, expand your emotional vocabulary. Don't just say stressed. Is it burning or dull? Transient or constant? Naming transforms emotions from commands into information. Your brain isn't a single commander. It's a patchwork of subselves working toward different goals. Researchers identified 7: self-protection, mate attraction, mate retention, affiliation, kin care, social status, and disease avoidance. Over 94% of people experience intrusive thoughts, mental simulations evaluating scenarios. When competing voices clash, try 3 tactics. Speak thoughts aloud. Verbalizing proves more effective than internal chatter. Second, recognize that successful athletes don't use more positive self-talk. Effectiveness depends on interpretation, not positivity. Third, create psychological distance by referring to yourself in third person. Children who did this stayed on task 60% of time versus 35% for those using I. Dan Cleather, a PhD strength coach, endured hours of tattoo pain by accepting the pain, not fighting it. Research on Buddhist meditators experiencing hot probe pain revealed that while novices and experts rated pain intensity similarly, above 7-10, meditators found it half as unpleasant. Brain scans showed novices' threat centers activated before pain began, while meditators showed minimal alarm response. As a young runner, I ignored pain until I couldn't, then bulldozed through, a strategy leaving me vomiting after races and eventually depleted. There are 4 ways to handle discomfort: avoid, fight, accept, or reappraise. My bulldoze method combined the first 2. Old school toughness is foundation. But research shows suppressing sensations amplifies them. Our brain interprets what we avoid as important. Being alone with thoughts is foundational to developing toughness, yet research shows people would rather shock themselves than sit quietly for 15 minutes. The solution? Practice being alone through activities like exercising without music. Start by sitting quietly for 5 minutes, gradually building to 15 or 20. Rather than fighting sensations, simply notice them. Practice controlling attention by directing focus fully on tasks, then letting your mind wander. Create space between feeling sensations and responding to them. When we're at our breaking point, the old push-through model fails. Two athletic friends visited a haunted house. Mo, an Olympian, bolted in panic. Tom embraced it with excitement. The difference lies in attention direction, turning emotional volume up by diving in or down by reframing. After Frank Shorter's 1972 Olympic marathon victory, researchers found elite runners used an associative strategy, paying close attention to bodily sensations. Recreational runners distracted themselves, but elite athletes don't rely solely on one approach. They strategically alternate, turning their brain off during certain segments, then zoning back in when needed. Real toughness offers multiple options: stopping emotional snowballs before they roll, using distraction to slow momentum, or employing reappraisal to redirect their path. While we associate peak performance with flow states, research reveals a second path, clutch states, where performers grind through difficulty with deliberate effort. True toughness means having both options available. Viktor Frankl, imprisoned in a concentration camp, mentally composed lectures while enduring unimaginable suffering. His radical insight? Joy and happiness should not, must not, and can never be a goal, but only an outcome. He outlined three paths to fulfillment: doing, creating, experiencing, nature, love, art, and suffering, which strips away vanities and presents an opportunity to respond. Our performance includes drive, actual effort divided by expected effort multiplied by motivation. Our bodies never truly reach zero reserves. Like a car's fuel gauge showing empty with reserve fuel remaining, our brain creates safety margins, warning us through fatigue before we're actually depleted. Frankl entered the camp with his manuscript on meaning sewn into his jacket, soon confiscated. He observed prisoners moving through shock, suicidal thoughts, then apathy, where inner life diminished to survival focus. Yet he discovered survival depended on one's inner world. The mind remained free, despite physical torture. Finding meaning in every moment, not just grand purpose, provided the will to survive. Growing up with OCD taught me that those society views as weak often possess the greatest inner strength. Real toughness means accepting who we are, what we face, and finding meaning in our struggles. The most revolutionary act might be accepting your full humanity, fears, doubts, and all, and moving forward anyway.